Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and you're joining us today as we speak to another interesting individual in the world of sports medicine and human performance and general health. We're so pleased to have with us today Dr. Nicholas Deutz, also known as Mick Deutz. I'll tell you a little bit about Dr. Deutz. He is a professor in translational research in aging and longevity in the Department of Health and Kinesiology here at Texas A&M. He's a double doctorate. He has both his medical degree, his MD from the University of Amsterdam, and a PhD from the University of Amsterdam as well. Been here for about a year now.
Almost a year.
Yeah, he's got over 250 papers published, a wide variety of awards. He's the editor of a couple of professional journals in his area, and so we are so pleased to have him and his research team here in the department. And, Mick, we're so glad to have you here on the podcast. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Tim.
Your primary research area falls under the general umbrella of metabolism.
On the health, actually.
And health, right. Yeah. But you do a lot of metabolism work.
Yes.
And the word metabolism is kicked around quite a bit in the lay literature, and it seems like, or in the popular press, a lot of people don't know what metabolism is. Let's start there. What is your definition of metabolism, and why should we all be concerned about this as a function of health?
Metabolism is the flow of nutrients, for instance. So if you take your carbohydrates with your meal in the morning, with your breakfast, then it has to go somewhere because if you just eat it and it comes out, it has no role. So the body has to take it up and convert it to something useful that can be used later on. Mm-hmm. That is what we call metabolism.
Okay.
And that's for everything in your food, but also in your body, of course. If you lose your muscle, then metabolism will take care of all those products that come out of this muscle wasting, and they have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all metabolism.
Okay. So why are we concerned about that for health? I mean, you do a lot of work with supplementation and so forth to help.
You know, you can measure everything in your body, but at the end, it's the change in metabolism that is related to your health or to your disease. So if you have a change in your genetic makeup that doesn't has any effect on metabolism, it doesn't have an effect.
Mm.
So at the end, it's the final path that leads to good or bad things in your body.
Yeah. So one of the things we always do is we ask, how did you get interested in nutrition and the metabolism side of things? I mean, what is your journey to that?
Yeah, the journey is actually started when I did my PhD research in Amsterdam. I was actually planned to become a neurosurgeon, but I got very attracted by the research. And the research was on brain metabolism in situations in which the liver fails.
Mm.
And that started my interest because the main characteristics there are some changes in some amino acid concentrations in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it became apparent that those same amino acids are actually in your daily food. So that links this interest to nutrition. My real interest is actually metabolism, but nutrition is a way to modify metabolism in the body. It's one of the most important ways, actually. Because without nutrition, you will die. So apparently, it's very important in what you eat.
Yeah.
And that is actually, that went on, and then I got my positions, and nutrition became more and more important, and then you roll into all kinds of organizations, and now I have a really almost holistic view on that nutrition really is very good for everything in your body, although we don't know how,
right.
But that's what I'm doing. I try to understand how it works.
Well, see, and that's what people will find interesting is that you say we really don't know how it's important. And that's what you're studying. I mean, people will sit here and go, well, I know how nutrition's good. It refuels my body or whatever. So tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing and how you're trying to, I guess, understand this a little bit better?
Yeah, my medical background causes me to be interested in disease. Mm. So disease is really number one. Mm-hmm. And we know, of course, that a lot of nutritional regimens that are actually very common here in the U.S. are not so good for your health. But my main interest is actually that if you are very sick, you can lose a lot of your body weight very quickly. Mm. And if you look at what do you actually lose there, of course, number one is your fat tissue. Mm-hmm. But strange enough, you lose fat tissue, but immediately also you lose muscle tissue. Hmm. So apparently, if you stop eating, you will only lose fat tissue, but your muscle tissue is reasonably maintained. Mm-hmm. But if you are sick, you will lose both fat, but also a lot of muscle tissue. And that's what we want to stop, because if you look at those people that lost most of the muscle tissue when they got sick, they have the highest chance to die. Hmm. So that relates to, if we can stop this loss of this muscle tissue, they actually will live longer. That's a longevity issue here,
right.
Actually.
Right.
But also they will live better, because if you are more you have more strength, your life can be better. Or for an older person, it really is like being in bed or be able to go to the restroom. The difference in your power and your muscle is very small, mm-hmm. to make this huge step.
Mm-hmm.
So all the research that we do, it defines in trying to reduce the loss of muscle tissue or changes in metabolism when there is a disease, and try to use nutrition to stop this loss.
Yeah. What changes with disease that causes you to lose the muscle? It's fascinating. You say if you stop eating, you lose fat, but if you get sick, you lose fat and muscle. So what's the general process that's happening there?
Yeah, there are two ways of looking at it. If you are sick, you get all kind of inflammatory substrates in your plasma that stimulates your metabolism, and more specifically, it stimulates your protein breakdown.
Mm.
So you can say, okay, so it's this inflammatory mediators that causes this loss of your muscle. But there's also an alternative view. Apparently, the body needs something there, mm-hmm. that it can only be provided by the muscle tissue that you have. So that's why it releases all these mediators. And the real issue is, what do you actually need when you are sick? Now, what you really need is certain substrates, mm. that are very hard to eat, because fat only releases fatty acids that gives you energy.
Right.
But if you lose muscle tissue, you will lose protein.
Mm-hmm.
And this protein contains certain amino acids that have specific functions in your body that are very important. A good example is that if you lose muscle tissue, you will see a huge production of a specific amino acid, glutamine.
Mm.
This glutamine is very important to maintain your gut function.
Mm.
So here you link something in your muscle to something in your gut. This glutamine is also taken up by the liver,
mm-hmm.
and generates their very important substrate. So energy alone is not enough to reduce your muscle loss, because muscle can generate specific nutrients.
Right.
The link to nutrition then is very clear, because if muscle generates this amino acid glutamine that is important, then why not give this glutamine to this individual?
Right.
Well, and then maybe the muscle loss will reduce.
Yeah.
As usual, it's not so simple, of course. But
biology never is.
This is what is done in many hospitals. They give specific nutrition with high levels of glutamine, with this basic idea to reduce the muscle loss in these patients.
Hmm. Now, isn't glutamine also used in the brain?
Glutamine is mainly produced in the brain.
Oh, mainly produced in the brain.
And it's actually released from the brain.
Hmm.
But the muscle is by far the highest producer.
Hmm.
One thing of this glutamine is, and that's the type of thing we do, this mm-hmm. glutamine then is taken up by the gut. But that's not the end of the story, because then another nutrient is produced, that's for instance citrulline, that mm-hmm. is taken up by the kidney. And in the kidney, it produces arginine. This mm-hmm. arginine is released again in the blood, and that is a precursor of nitric oxide, what you need to get rid of all the bacteria in case you have an infection.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge inter-organ transport of nutrients. And that's all the things that we actually study, because we study the flow from one organ to the other, or we study how much is produced actually in the body. What is very important in the research is that some people, for instance, they measure your glucose when mm-hmm. you are sick. And your glucose goes up, and then everybody thinks, okay, you produce more glucose, we should reduce it. But if a plasma concentration goes up, it also can mean that your body uses less. Mm. So you can actually stimulate the body to take it up.
Right.
And this is exactly the point. You should have ways to measure the actual production and the actual consumption of a nutrient in the body. And that is the thing that we do actually most in the research. That's why we have these complicated approaches, but they all aim at this very simple thing: how much is actually produced and how much is actually consumed. Measuring a concentration in a blood sample actually is not sufficient.
Right. We're gonna come back and talk about how you do that, because you do have some unique techniques. Mm-hmm. But before we get away from this, the glutamine and the arginine and so forth, you had said that, you know, hospitals will give people glutamine. Does that work?
To prove that something works is very complicated. In science, and in our science, of course, in nutrition, mm-hmm. if you test 10 individuals and you give them a glutamine, there is a chance that you will find an effect. Mm. And that's usually the case. They publish studies in which in a small number of patients something was beneficial. Then it has to go to a larger study mm-hmm. with hundreds of subjects to prove that it is actually working. Then it becomes always more difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's always then less clear that something helps. Now, in the nutrition world, we lack the funding as in the drug world. Mm-hmm. In a drug world, they can do these huge studies.
Right.
In the nutrition world, we do not have a lot of money to do these large studies.
Yeah, it's not very sexy for companies to say, we're just going to spend to give people glutamine.
That's a kind of a problem. So we lack these very large studies. Mm-hmm. So that's why nutrition is always kind of a difficult subject, because everybody will ask you, does it really work?
Right.
Yeah, we think it does really work, but we need a large study. But it's very hard to find the financing for that.
Well, and also when you're talking about large studies, you're talking about in humans, you're talking about bed rest. You got to find sick individuals. Those, that even makes it more difficult.
It's actually very difficult, and even in the drug study world, it's almost impossible to do a study in one place. So you have to do multi-center studies that we actually are entertaining at the moment. A very large U.S.-wide multi-center study to look at the benefits of giving nutrition if people come out of the hospital. A very simple question. You would think that's known. No, it's not known, because it's a huge effort to prove that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many of these supplements that say that you should take them because it'll make you feel better or make you well or whatever. And so you're saying there's really not a lot of evidence to support those kind
no,
of claims.
No, because all those claims are linked to small studies, because none of the companies, except a few, mm-hmm. have the resources to actually prove that it's working. And so you would think, so is that good or bad? It can be negative in our nutrition world, because patients would think, oh, today they say it's good to eat this supplement, and tomorrow they say eat the other supplement. And so people can actually get demotivated by the idea, yeah, they come up with something every day, but what does really work?
Right.
That's actually what I try to do, to come up with a real proof that something works. And it's sometimes really more simple than you think, because you would think we are working on special supplements, but actually just proving that a supplement is good to give on a patient is already something that needs to be proven in certain conditions.
Which supplements would you suggest right now? Given the limited knowledge, we understand that, you know, the studies are small and so forth, but y'all have done some work that have shown that there is some positive benefits to some of them.
My message, and we just published, I think, a very good opinion paper about it, that just says, you know, it actually doesn't matter which supplement. It matters that this supplement contains a certain amount of proteins of a certain value. And if you look into my eyes as a researcher working in this area for many years...
And I'm looking in your eyes right now.
That's okay. Very good then. I believe there is not a lot of real good evidence that doing more than just giving enough nutrients is really more beneficial.
Mm.
And you would think, how easy is it? Yeah, if people get older, the real issue there is they start eating less protein. And it's not about more glutamine. No, we are just talking about they should eat more protein, and we should put it in a way that elderly people can cope with that and actually will take it and have the good taste.
Right.
That's more important. So the supplement world is not yet in the scientific world, I think.
Right. Yeah, the supplement world reminds me of they're always chasing the magic supplement as opposed to looking at what's
they
really
don't
in
exist.
The science.
Yeah. They don't exist. And I think you have to be honest if somebody say that nutrient Y is very helpful because in Africa there was a cactus that produces this nutrient. That's not a guarantee that it is effective.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody will really prove that it is effective because there are no resources. So that's why you have so many different types of supplements. But at the end, I think the best supplement actually is milk.
Yeah.
Just milk.
Good nutrition.
Good nutrition. But milk by itself contains pretty good levels of protein, et cetera, et cetera.
We're going to, for the audience, listening audience, we'll take and we will link in our show notes to this opinion paper that Dr. Deutsch just talked about. So we'll put that up so you can have access to that. Let's back up a little bit and talk about some of the methods that you use. You're unique in that you have a four-bed clinical unit here, and you can expand that, I think, to 8 beds, right?
Oh, yeah, or even more, actually.
Yeah. And so this is a place where you can actually bring people in and they can go into bed for periods of time and look at a variety of different things.
And we do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really cool approach. But so one of the methods you use is stable isotopes. So tell our audience a little bit about what that is and why that is unique and why that is the way to go.
Now, think about this glucose again.
Mm.
If you think about glucose molecule consists of protons, on carbon and on oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for instance, take the carbon out. The weight of carbon normally is 12, mm-hmm. a molecular weight. But you can have carbons that are a little bit more heavy, and they have a molecular weight of 13.
Mm.
But it's still the same glucose.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in the normal glucose in your body, a small fraction of the carbons are 13 instead of 12,
mm.
because it's a natural occurring isotopes. But you can enrich glucose until all the carbons are 13 instead of 12. It's still the same glucose, it has the same metabolic pathways, everything is the same, but it's a little bit heavier.
Okay.
If you then are able to measure or distinguish the carbon 13 glucose from the carbon 12 glucose, you actually have a tracer that can trace all the metabolic routes that glucose take.
Hmm.
And that's exactly the background of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We can follow those nutrients. So you can give somebody a meal, but you label all the glucose with 13. And then if you look in the blood, you can actually see what comes from your meal because that's carbon 13, while in your body everything is carbon 12. So you can distinguish what is used from your meal, and then you can follow that metabolism. And you can do that with any substrate.
Well, that's a really cool approach because, it comes back to what you said earlier. If you give somebody something, then you can trace it and you find out what it's actually doing and not doing.
And these stable isotopes are non-radioactive. You can give them to preterm babies, to pregnant women. They are completely harmless, mm-hmm. but you just need very expensive, high-quality equipment to be able to detect them in your body.
Right. And you have one of those centers. You have mass spec.
Of course, we have several mass specs in the lab to be able to measure these somewhat heavier molecules.
Yeah. And we'll brag on you a little bit more. You are funded from the federal government
to do this.
Yeah. And so that's really a cool approach. Now, there aren't a lot of centers that are using that same approach in this area, which makes you unique with some of the things that you do. A question I often get is how many other people in the country are doing the same thing you are for our work? So if I ask you that question, what do you think the prevalence of that is?
I think there are 3 or 4 in the U.S. doing this approach.
Yeah.
Because you need to be substantially funded to be mm-hmm. able to have this equipment, and you need a background of understanding metabolism, and you need a background of understanding using tracers to trace all these metabolic routes. And you need almost an overall knowledge of how the body works, because if I give this tracer by nutrition, it will go to your muscle, but it will also go to your kidney, it will also go to your liver, it will also go to your brain. So you have to understanding of the of the body, actually. So the medical background is usually very important in our field.
So you have to be an integrative physiologist, a biochemist, a nutrition.
Yeah, and that's actually what it is.
Yeah. A little bit of everything.
And medical.
And medical, yeah. You know, we're running short on time. We've really enjoyed having you here today, Dr. Deutz. Can you give us a take-home message for the audience? What do you want them to remember?
What they should remember is really that nutrition matters also if you are sick. It even matters more when you are sick. Mm. And if you are older and you are sick, it's become one of the most important things you can do as a patient to improve your condition. And that's really the take-home message here, and that's what I tell everybody.
Excellent. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. We've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And thank all of you for taking the time to download us and listen today. If you've been waiting for our podcast question of the week, here is our producer, Kelly, with that question.
What is one of the most important ways to modify metabolism?
Super question. Be the first one to send us the answer to that question. So you can send us an email at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, and you'll win one of our nifty podcast T-shirts. Again, hurry up. We keep saying that we're running out of our second editions, and if you want to keep your collection complete, you need to get this second edition. And don't think you're too late to answer, so just send us that email whenever you get a chance. Dr. Deutz, thank you again for being with us. We're going to have to bring you back at some point to talk more about some of these other supplements.
That's fine, Tim. Thank you.
And again, thank you all for taking the time to download us and be with us this week. We hope that you join us next week for another interesting individual in the world of sports medicine and human performance and general health. And until then, we hope that you stay active and have a healthy week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, and our music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.